Welcome to the Private Investment Podcast brought to you by Limited Partners Club. We bring together private sector investors to tackle subjects like wealth creation, capital preservation, and legacy. We hope you enjoy.
Hey everybody, Coburn Shepik here from Limited Partners Club. I hope you're having a fantastic week. Happy to be here as usual. In today's discussion, we're going to be talking about passively investing into commercial real estate. And I'm excited for this conversation because in most cases, a lot of people are so focused on the deal itself and the numbers. There's a lot more to this, and there's a lot more strategy and thought that goes in that we'll dive into, but that align with you as an individual investor, as well as the operator or sponsors of your choice and the asset class you choose and why, and to get a full scope, high level of an understanding of understanding the risks and controlling what you can control, because in any investment, real estate, and everything else, there is risk. And that risk that's involved can be in some cases controlled. So the goal is to the best of our ability, control the risk that is involved. And so we're going to keep it very high level today, but this will be high level, sort of a checklist to follow when investing in commercial real estate. So if you are an experienced LP, or if you're new to the game of investing on the passive level in commercial real estate, I think this will be a good discussion for you. So the topics that we're going to cover: investment profiles, asset classes and markets, how you basically choose those based on your investment goals, choosing an operator or a sponsor, and actually doing due diligence on the deal and the operating group themselves, and getting started. So let's begin. And when it comes to investment profiles, asset classes, and markets, the first thing that I want to talk about is investment profiles themselves. And if I don't want to get, I'm going to keep a high level here, but last week we talked more in depth on the different types of investment profiles, which is really relates to the risk and reward profile and how that aligns with your goals as an investor. So to recap, there's kind of four main food groups. That's core, core plus, value add, and opportunistic, excuse me. And core is the most stabilized, usually class A properties that are traditionally acquired for the cash flow. Okay, so think of a prime commercial tenant. It might be a national drugstore or a Starbucks, right? They're on a long-term lease. They're very creditworthy. They're usually in very nice properties, and they provide consistent, stable cash flow. Core plus, which as we work through the spectrum here, core being at the top, opportunistic at the bottom, the lower we go is, in that example, the higher the risk and the higher the reward is involved. So moving down to core plus, think about an older apartment community that could have potential upside through improvements. Let's just for an example, if the kitchens are outdated, slightly outdated, doesn't need a full makeover, but it could have an increase in rents if we were to, for lack of better words, give it a facelift. Value add, which is the next, moving down the spectrum here, which a lot of people love value add. And value add is truly an unstabilized property, meaning it needs to have, it could be poorly managed. It could be the actual condition of the property. It could be occupancy issues, right? And it needs certain key events to occur in order for the property to become stabilized. And because of the improvements that are needed, there can be quite a bit of upside potential because of the improvements we're making to the management or to the property in order to get the property to a stable, to to be stabilized within that given market. And as we move down through these profiles, the return potential is obviously on the cash flow side as well, but the more we move down here, the more upside potential there is to the actual appreciation. So moving down the spectrum here, which is at the most risk and has the most room for upside, is opportunistic. And this is, in most common cases, ground up development. So starting from the ground up to build, construct, lease up, all the things that need to happen, entitlement, right? All of these certain key events that need to happen in order to have a stabilized property. Another example would be rezoning or getting the entitlement for an adaptive reuse case. So in today's environment, there's hotels and office space being transformed into residential apartments. So that would be an opportunistic example of adaptive reuse. So choosing these investment profiles is truly based on your preferences and goals as an investor. And you might diversify based into more than one category. If stabilized cash flow is important, right? But you also want part of your portfolio diversified into ground up developments, which is more on the risk, but also more on the upside potential. Those are some of the decisions that you need to take into consideration when choosing an investment profile. So the next thing I want to talk about is sub-asset classes and how you choose these sub-asset classes. People are biased towards certain things like multifamily. Everybody loves multifamily, right? Everybody needs a place to live. And there is pros and cons to each of these, the main food groups, which is multifamily, office, industrial, retail. And there certainly is other type of many different other types of sub-asset classes, hospitality, right, storage, and a lot of things in between, senior living, medical, right, different types of industrial. And how you choose these sort of goes back to your investment profile is what are the pros and cons and understanding. And we'll talk about location in a second, but when you do think about locations, this should also come into play, right? What are the market drivers? And we'll talk about that in a second. But certainly there are pros and cons to different asset classes, right? For example, if we were to invest in a Class B or a Core Plus multifamily and in a secondary market, right? And this might be workforce housing. The tenants that occupy the property are far less creditworthy than a prime industrial site leased to Amazon. So the risk potential between those two asset types are far different. And so those are some of the considerations to take in when choosing a specific sub-asset class. So understanding the risks that are associated with each of these asset classes will help better determine which preference you have and why. Let's talk about location markets. So there's three types of markets, right? Primary, secondary, tertiary. And think of this as the primary markets are gateway markets, urban downtown locations, San Francisco, New York. Obviously these markets are getting hurt today. That's a different story, but distress when choosing a market, always remember that distress typically in today's environment, what's going on today with office is much different. But typically when there is a down cycle, it typically begins in secondary and tertiary markets and works itself inward to bigger gateway markets. Now what's going on with office today in these urban core downtown markets today is that we have, there's a big problem with office, right? And all this office space is at risk because of the differences and the impact that came to us from the pandemic, right? Work from home, flexible workforce. And that will impact the way that urban markets are, but it will truly, just like different periods in time, it will truly drive the need for transformation. And so we think that absolutely these markets, these primary markets, will continue to flourish in the long term, but they will take some big transformation, right? More mixed use, more flexible workspace, more entertainment, more hospitality, more residential, right? And less of the traditional office space. So primary markets are typically more expensive. They're harder. They have a higher barrier of entry. And over to tertiary markets, which are sort of growth markets or outskirts, right? And these are easier to enter. They're typically less expensive. And they have the most room for upside potential. But the potential risk is that those markets are usually hurt first rather than primary markets. So understanding the micro and macro locations when seeking opportunities and when determining your investment profile, micro markets, sub-markets in particular, are real estate. You know the term location, 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 but the micro location is really what's important, right? The submarket in general, the specific corner, which direction, right? All of these things come into play, what your neighbors are. And so by understanding the overall state of the economy and looking at it on a micro and a macro level, and then when an opportunity does come into play, we need to ask ourselves, does this submarket support this opportunity, right? For example, does this prime industrial site fit in this micro submarket, and why? So what are the market drivers, right? What are the jobs? What's the income? All these certain statistics that we can look at that'll help us understand, is this a good location for this opportunity or not? So choosing an operator or a sponsor is the next subject that I want to speak about. And this is far more important than the actual deal. And when investing passively, you truly are betting on the jockey, you know the phrase. And so my point is that this is a poor operator will make a good deal go bad. And a great operator can make a potential bad deal go good. So the importance of this is far greater than almost every other case as it relates to the deal itself, the market, right? A best in class operator that has a track record, that has done this before, is usually going to make the best out of the case. And so how do we actually choose an operator? And everybody has their different, what they look at. And again, most people look at the deal first or the market first or the asset first, but the operator is certainly key and should be the primary focus. So what we look at, and I like to invite you to just use our rules of thumb, and that is understand the operator or the sponsor's track record. And if they have such an amazing track record, they should have that audited, meaning that I don't want to see, it needs to be more in depth than what's shown on their website. This is what we bought it for. This is what we sold for. We need to understand more in depth of what happened in those cases and what they did, or if they just got lucky, right? We need to back that track record up and ask ourselves some important questions. Number one is, has this operator operated in this specific market before? All markets are different. So a good operator who is focused on primary markets is not necessarily the best fit for a different market, right? If I'm a developer in Phoenix and all of a sudden we're doing a development in Provo, Utah, it's not the greatest fit, although they might have the resources and the knowledge, but they are in a different market, which is completely different. Another example is, has the operator successfully executed a project like this before? And so what I mean by this is everybody does start somewhere, as the operators do start somewhere, right? They're doing multifamily or they're doing single family, which we're not talking about. But a lot of people in the residential space begin, as far as the operator, they begin with single family in a lot of cases and then move to multifamily. So this would be a red flag, right? If we're investing in the operator's first multifamily project, but they've only done single family projects, this is a different, this is a totally different game. And so that would be a red flag. And so this goes on the development side as well. Just because you can operate a stabilized property does not mean that you are the right fit for us for doing a ground up development, going through entitlement, zoning, construction, lease up, and all that in between. And secondly, has this operator navigated through at least two economic cycles? So for the past 10 years now, we've had the longest expansionary period basically in history. And especially in the last few years, anybody who owned a roof, any property with a roof appreciated in value. So what I'm getting at is that what you see in today's environment, especially with the operators that just bought a few years back, they're showcasing these massive returns. Oh, look at this 20% IRR. Look at this. All these return metrics, and they're losing sight. They got lucky, is the point, because of what's happened in recent years. And so, what we look for is operators or sponsors that have gone that navigated through 2008. And that have successfully operated their business through at least two cycles. And certainly there is great operators that are young and might not have operated through prior cycles, and that's understandable, but somebody, an advisor, a sponsor, somebody on the team must have navigated through at least two, and 2008 being one of those cycles. Because when capital is hard to come by and lending is tight, the investment environment is completely different. And so what we'll see here is those who bought, for example, multifamily in the past few years, especially with bridge loans, their narrative is going to change dramatically if they're not already in hiding. So this is very, very important. So the next thing I want to dive into is due diligence. And this is where we actually start looking at the deal and looking at really what's important. So the first thing that we want to look at is what is the basis, right? This is how you make money in real estate, is by buying at a great basis, meaning that buying at the market value is not necessarily going to make you money. It will produce cash flow, right? Appreciate over time, but it's not how you make big dollars in real estate. So by how do we look at the basis from a passive investor's standpoint, and obviously looking at comparable sales and comparable properties, what is this asset? What is this asset type in this specific market for trading today? And what are we buying it at? And that'll help you justify what type of basis we are buying at. Another metric to look at and to understand, and you must understand this, is what is the replacement cost? What does it take to develop this property today in this location? And to That'll help understand those. By looking at those two points, will really help you get a grasp as far as what type of basis we're getting this property at. Next is the business plan, and this is super important. Back to my point earlier about key events, right? And by choosing what type of investment profile to go after and why. When we're looking at a specific deal or a specific opportunity, understanding the key events help you associate the risks that are involved in that business plan. So if we are doing a ground up development, there's entitlement, there's zoning, there's construction, there's lease up, all of these certain things need to happen. And by understanding what things need to happen, we need to be able to look at worst case scenario, right? What if this takes longer to execute certain key events? What if one of those key events fails? So any good operator, any great operator should and will have a worst case scenario if things get, there needs to be padding there, right? You need to have a great basis. You need to be able to navigate worst case scenario, like in today's environment. So along with the business plan, what's the holding period? Is this a three-year term? Is it a seven-year term? If it's shorter period of time, is that realistic? And does that align with your goals? And then also, what's the exit strategy? What's the cap rate? What's the projected cap rate at sale? A lot of newbie operators are very aggressive on the exit cap rate. And so by having a rule of thumb of what to look for and why you that is a rule of thumb, and to be not conservative or aggressive, but be as accurate as possible, which none of us have a crystal ball. So it is a projection, but that projection should be realistic, most importantly, because when looking at an offering, along with the operator, the market, the business plan, a lot of individual investors are looking at the potential returns. And so those returns can be skewed easily by that exit cap, which is super important. So back to the key events, by looking into the deal and actually looking at, okay, who is actually, and this relates to asset management, who is actually who is managing these key events and making sure this business plan gets executed properly. There's many levels to take this to, but certain KPIs, for example, keeping people accountable to hit certain benchmarks within certain timeframes, right? Understand what type of management is going on to support this business plan and does it support it? Next, as it relates to due diligence, is the capital structure and the capital sources and the capital uses. And this is very important. And back to the choosing an operator subject as it relates to the specific opportunity. One thing to note here that people that especially newer limited partners is how much is the specific operator, how much is the operator investing in the deal? What's the co-investment? Is it 5% of the equity needed? Is it 10? Is it 20? Five would definitely be not ideal. What we want to see is at least 15% of the equity needed is being brought in by the actual sponsor or the operator. And this shows conviction, because if people have their own money into the deal, they're more likely to do what it needs to do what it takes to have that business plan be successful. If they've got less money in, then they potentially get lazy and have some lack of care. And to bring that to a next level, and this is just as important, is whose money is that? So if they're bringing in 10%, is it their own money? Are they writing the check? Is it syndicated equity, meaning that they've just got a bunch more investors involved, which does not create an alignment of interest? Or is it family and friends' money, right? Is it their mom's money? So by understanding there's certain things, we can have a level of trust and a level of alignment that is super important. Nobody wants to lose their own money. Nobody wants to lose their family's money, right? So by understanding the sources of that capital, helps us understand what type of alignment there actually is between the partnership. So the capital, on the capital structure side, we need to understand the entire capital structure and where that money is being used. What's the loan to value, or what's the loan to cost? How much equity is involved? And where is that money being put to work? So what I mean by that is, if it's a value add project and we're putting in a few million into the property itself, we want to see specific line by line where this capital is going into the property. Because those types of investments are not all made equal. And so not only are they not made equal, but there also could be unrealistic, meaning it could take more capital. And so by having an understanding of that, and taking that into consideration of the business plan and the metrics that are shown on the offering, as far as the returns, right? All this kind of comes into play. So lastly, on the due diligence side, is the equity waterfall itself. How is the money split? And this really comes down to the alignment of interest between the general partners, or the operator, or the sponsor, and the limited partners, or the passive investors, right? Who gets paid when and how much? And so by looking at this, we're trying to determine if there truly is a good alignment of interest between these two parties, between you as the investor and the operator. And so some of the questions to ask here is it pari passu? Is who gets paid first? Is there multiple hurdles? And is there potentially a second promote involved in the deal? And so there is some important, it's important to actually understand what the waterfall is and how it works and the different hurdles. There's many different ways to cut that piece up. And so I think a lot of people actually don't fully understand what can be involved in the waterfall, sort of like the fine print there. But it is very important, and that's how investors get paid. So I want to jump into. So lastly, I want to talk about some of the, if passively investing in commercial real estate is new to you, I want to talk about some of the few main starting points of what is important of how to get started. And I'll keep this very short, but to have a lot of people, again, are so focused on the deal and the numbers and the underwriting and all the stuff, which is very important. But really, what we talked about, in my opinion today, as far as understanding the business plan, understanding how to look at the markets and choose a correct investment profile for you, and really, most importantly, from a passive investor's perspective, is choosing the right operator. And so the three main takeaways that I want to leave you with today, number one, if there was something that we spoke about as far as, for example, the equity waterfall, if that is truly not fully understand it by you, you must understand the details, because the devil is in the details, especially when it comes to this type of investment. And so to get the education needed to be able to understand those metrics and understand how to look at a capital structure and understand how to look at capital uses and looking at the projected CapEx or the what is going to be invested into a property, to understand what goes into successfully executing certain key events like entitlements or construction or lease up. And if you have a full grasp on that or at that point, you need to get clarity on which direction you are going to go. And but what I mean by that is what type of investment profile, right? What fits alongside your goals? What asset types and what asset classes and why? And lastly, is what markets? And so typically people are just biased towards one because sort of like this herd mentality, like, right, the Sun Belt, we only invest in the Sun Belt. And that there's many reasons why people invest in the Sun Belt. But to understand the different markets, understand the risks involved, and understand what new growth markets there are, and have your own opinion and own perspective is essential in this, because the herd mentality is not always the right way. And so again, in another example, everybody loves multifamily, right? Everybody needs a place to live, and multifamily is great. But going back to my example earlier, there's pros and cons to multifamily, just like there is every other asset type. And so to have your perspective and have that be alongside your investment goals is key to a successful plan for yourself. So get clarity and narrow down the focus. It's okay to diversify, but it's challenging, especially when you're just getting started out, to have all your kind of you're kind of spread thin, right? If we're looking all over the board, let's narrow down on a certain target and attack that target. And so lastly is, and this goes back to choosing an operator. There's many different types of operators out there. There's many different markets. There's many different resources to get educated, right? And all this stuff that goes into this. And so one of the keys here, if you are just getting started, is join a quality network. And the reason for this is to locate quality opportunities, locate quality sponsors and operators, get around people that are investing and that are doing the deals, that have the resources, that have the capital, and get in those rooms. And the better, and by better, I mean the more quality the network is, the more quality of opportunities and partnerships and deals will come out of. Quality networks, quality opportunities. These two things come straight in line. And let me give you one example, and we'll finish it up there. And that is, I'll give you this real life example. When I was younger, just getting started in real estate, I think I was maybe 20 at the time or 19 at the time. I was surrounded with and surrounding myself with to get involved in this business. Everybody was focused on fix and flip residential properties, which people make a living out of, but those are at the bottom of the spectrum here as it relates to the potential. And so so my network consisted of mediocre, sort of crappy residential fix and sell marginal deals. And by getting into a more quality network, the opportunities that come from that are far greater. And so with that being said, I'll wrap it up here, but I want to thank you for your time today and hope this helped you get some clarity. If you are just getting started in the passive investment world, I think these these topics today that we discussed should be the primary focus, along with having an understanding of the mechanics of real estate, of course. And if you are an experienced investor, limited partner that has invested before, I hope this brought some clarity to you on some of the primary focuses and some of the red flags that can come up for future opportunities and what to look for. So before I take off here, I want to introduce you to Limited Partners Club. And if you are already involved and in our network, I want to thank you for trusting us and joining us. If you are not, I want to invite you to join us. So we have launched this community, our club, and the mission for us is to create really quality networks with like-minded passive investors. And we have our operating partners that we bring into the circle. And so the goal is to talk about deals, build relationships, build networks, and by doing so, hopefully do some deals together in the future. So if you are not already, have not already joined, I want to invite you to join. And it's free to join. We don't ever plan on monetizing this group ever. The goal really is to build very quality networks and do deals out of the group together. And so we're doing this regular meeting every Tuesday that everybody's welcome to join who's in the group, as well as we'll be hosting some private dinner events later this year. So I'm super excited for what's to come. But again, I invite you to join. It's completely free. We do have an online community where you can network with the other members of the group, as well as during this weekly call. So if you'd like to join, or if you have somebody who you'd like to invite, you can visit limitedpartnersclub.com. That's limitedpartnersclub.com. And you can just request to join there and get access to the group. Thank you again for your time today. My name is Coburn Shepik. I'd love to connect with you, hopefully in the community, but outside is fine too. I'm active mostly on LinkedIn, or you can reach me at coburnshepik.com. and get in touch. I'd love to speak with you. So thank you again so much for your time today, and we will see you next week. Cheers.